Hello.
Podcast Network Asia. You're listening to episode 2 of a two-part series into the shocking murders of four Filipinas and how Cyprus's first serial killer, Nikos Metaxas, nearly got away with murder.
We've seen death. We've seen a lot of things. But we've never seen anything like this. It's hard for the human mind to take in. These were the words of Cyprus's veteran fire chief, Marcos Strangolas, moments after finding several decomposing bodies stuffed in suitcases at Lake Mitsero. They were led there by the man who's confessed to the killings, Nikos Metaxas, who detailed how he targeted and murdered low-wage female migrant workers in a shocking and disturbing 10-page handwritten confession. In it, he admitted that the first two murders happened in 2016 when he killed 36-year-old Romanian national Livia Bunea and her daughter Elana Natalia. Metaxas wrote that he met Livia via the online dating app Badu, claiming that he also met her daughter Elana when they first arranged to meet. Additionally, he told the investigators that he believed Livia was prostituting her daughter, but provided no proof that would support his suspicions. Metaxas was convinced that he needed to set Elana free to save her from sexual abuse and framed himself as her hero. Soon after meeting, Metaxas and Livia had sex at Livia's house, where he strangled her to death by putting her in a headlock, a technique that he's used to kill all but one of his victims. After he killed Livia, Metaxas said that he sat and stared at her body before finally making his way to Elana's room, where he choked the 8-year-old as she lay in bed. A similar story unfolded with Mary Rose, who, unlike Livia, was found without her daughter Sierra. The 6-year-old's body would be found days later in another lake, wrapped in a bedsheet and weighed down by a cement brick. Metaxas told investigators that he thought about going into a serious relationship with Mary Rose until he started to suspect that she might prostitute her daughter too if she were offered money. He tested his theory on the day that he murdered them. When he asked Mary Rose to take Sierra with her to his place, he said he wanted to see if she would go for it. According to court records, Metaxas and Rose were having sex in another room when Sierra began to cry. He claimed to have checked on the child 40 minutes later and found her choking on her own vomit. Metaxas said that he tried to revive the child and then revive Mary Rose. It's unclear if he had already killed Mary Rose before checking up on Sierra, but records show that both mother and child died of strangulation. At the hearing, Metaxas again reiterated how he believed that he was setting Mary Rose and Sierra free by strangling them to death. Ariane Lozano and Maricar Arquiola, the other two Filipinas, also suffered the same fate. Both women were invited to his place, where he admitted to strangling them to death while having sex. The only victim that did not die of strangulation is 30-year-old Nepali Asmita Tadka. In his confession, Metaxas admitted to driving Asmita to a remote location west of Nicosia, where they started to have sex. At some point, Asmita realized that Metaxas was filming the encounter and she spat at him. He killed her inside the vehicle and dumped her body at a local firing range. Autopsy records would show that Asmita died of blunt force trauma to the head. Before we continue, here's a quick word from our fellow podcasters from Podcast Network Asia.
Yo, what's up? This is Real Talk Darbs. Join me as we talk about life, love, relationships, and hear me drop wisdom bombs on every talk. Do check me out in Wisdom Bars with Real Talk Darbs Podcast. That's Wisdom Bars with Real Talk Darbs Podcast, now part of Podcast Network Asia. Check me out. Yalla, bye!
Death by strangulation is one of the most popular methods of murder employed by serial killers. Often, the killer wants to see the life leave their victims, making the act intimate and personal. Negus Mitax's preferred method of homicide and its sexual nature puts him among a frightening group of serial killers known for violent acts of sexual homicide. One of them is Samuel Little, considered by the FBI as the most prolific known serial killer in U.S. history. Now 79, Little has confessed to strangling or drowning 93 women for sexual kicks, and to prove it, he made detailed sketches of his victims from memory. His killing spree began in 1970 and only ended in 2005 when he became too frail to overpower his victims. In videotaped interviews released by the FBI, Little spoke about the killings as if they were ordinary events, frequently interrupting his animated narration with smiles or laughter. His recollections were full of detail, often including the name of streets and the clothing of his victims. Behind bars, Little admitted to killing as long and slow as possible, sometimes letting the women slip in and out of consciousness while he gets sexual pleasure from their agony. He talked about his first victim, a Miami woman with strawberry blonde hair in 1970. He spotted her at a restaurant booth, a prostitute in fishnet stockings. Little recalls watching her touch her neck as she crossed her legs and thinking of her normal, inconsequential gesture as a sign from God. Little has a sexual fixation with necks of females, which he recalled to have started in primary school when he dreamed of killing one of his female classmates after observing her touch her neck. To say that Little has a prolific rap sheet is an understatement. He's been arrested and served time for almost every crime imaginable since 1956, from burglary, breaking and entering, assault and battery, theft, armed robbery, to rape and sodomy in different states, and shockingly, only served 10 years on and off altogether, this in spite of the violence of his crimes. In September 1976, Little was arrested in Missouri for rape, assault with bodily injury, and robbery of Pamela K. Smith. She'd shown up hysterical on a stranger's doorstep after escaping Little's car and running near naked through the night. Her hands were bound behind her with electrical cord. Records showed that Little had strangled, bitten, beaten, and sodomized her. He was convicted of a lesser charge of assault with attempt to ravish and served only 3 months. Investigators looking into Little as the prime suspect for multiple cold case homicides in 2012 were baffled and livid. That same year, he was successfully apprehended and extradited to LA by using an outstanding 2007 drug warrant against him. Then, while in custody, the investigators went into an exhaustive process of building a rock-solid case against Samuel Little. He was finally convicted to serve 3 consecutive life sentences with no possibility of a parole in September of 2014 for 3 murders that he committed in the Los Angeles area. How he got away with so many murders for so long all came down to his choice of victims. He deliberately selected victims on the fringes of society, vulnerable women he believed the police would ignore, like prostitutes and drug addicts. Victims like 38-year-old prostitute and heroin addict Denise Brothers. In 1994, Little recalled pulling Denise into an alley where he grabbed her by the throat before tossing her over the backseat of his car like a rag doll. He strangled her with one hand while masturbating with the other. During the assault, Denise wept and Little kissed her tears, saying, "I own you, you're mine forever," before squeezing the life from her. In an interview with New York journalist Jillian Loren, he said, "I never killed no senators or governors or fancy New York journalists, nothing like that. If I'd killed you," he said, referring to Jillian, "it'd be all over the news the next day. I stayed in the ghettos." Nikos Mitaxas may not have found his victims in the ghettos, but by preying on female housekeepers and low-wage service workers, he took advantage of reported institutional misogynistic and racist attitudes by Cyprian law enforcement officers towards female migrant workers, enabling him to continue his assault on helpless women and indulge his depravity for almost 3 years. All of his victims had been reported missing shortly after their disappearance, with the case of the Romanian native Bunea and her daughter even investigated by a local journalist. According to the island's Domestic Workers Association, when the authorities were initially alerted of Mary Rose's disappearance, one police officer reacted by saying that he was too old to concern himself with missing Filipino women. Evidence gathered since the discovery of the bodies have revealed a pattern of police failing to follow up cases. Officers often claim victims have absconded to the war-divided island's Turkish-run north, which lies outside of the internationally recognized Greek south. As a result of the mounting public outrage, the justice minister resigned and the chief of police was fired. Then, the news website Kathimeni Cyprus wrote a letter of apology to the victims' families and said the killings were a crime against the country as well, while denouncing xenophobic tendencies and racist behaviors. An editorial from the Cyprus Mail addressed the public shock and heartbreak over the brutal deaths with this excerpt. There is no escaping the fact that had they done their jobs in the case of Bunea, 5 other lives could have been spared. Perhaps the police's utter disregard for the safety of poor foreign women, including single mothers, reflects the attitude of our society, which is not particularly concerned about protecting the weak, impoverished, and disempowered foreigners working in Cyprus. In the end, Metaxas not only introduced Cyprus to the heinous nature of serial killers, but brought it face to face with the demon within, a reckoning for a country paid for in blood, but the souls it failed to protect.
You have just listened to the concluding episode of a two-part series on serial killers and Nikos Metaxas, Cyprus's first known serial killer in the last 24 hours.
Don't miss out on new episodes. Like, subscribe to The Last 24 Hours, or follow the podcast on Facebook at Historia Ni Jet, where you can get in touch, tell me your thoughts, suggest cases, or just say hello. I'll do my best to get back to you.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.